My name's Lisa Simpson. I'm a partner at PwC, and it's my great pleasure to introduce the speakers and chair today's session. I'll go through their bios briefly. Linda is going to kick us off, and she's going to be talking about the WorkSafe Victoria scheme. Linda started work as a superannuation actuary, but we won't hold that against her. She was with Mercers. We also won't hold that against her. Saw the light, and she moved to PwC. And then she eventually became a director with our practice in 1995. Then she left and went to WorkSafe, and she's been there since 2004. She's been involved in lots of different aspects of the scheme's operations, which makes her eminently qualified to talk about the scheme today. One of Linda's highlights, which she shared with us, is that she successfully completed the Melbourne Oxfam Trail Walker 100-kilometre event every year for 3 years in a row from the team We Walk Safe. So good on Linda for keeping fit and active, and I'll hand over to you.
Thanks, Lisa. When I was asked to do the scheme update, I agreed, and I thought it would be relatively straightforward, but on reflection, I actually found it difficult to fit into 15 minutes all that's going on at WorkSafe Victoria and that I thought you would be interested in. What I have settled on is a little bit about the past history of the scheme, because I think that really provides the context to where we are now and where we want to move to. I have a few slides on our plan for the future, which is called Strategy 2017, and the program of change that we're currently going through to put in place initiatives so that we're better placed to reach the goals of that strategy. I plan to show you some of our key trends and talk about in a bit more detail some of the initiatives to drive those trends. And finally, I'll cover what's currently challenging or expected to challenge us in the future. Before we move on, just in case there's people that aren't familiar with our scheme, we're a monopoly insurer and regulator. We have 5 managing agents who manage claims costs and collect premium for us. They don't underwrite. Some stats, we're a big scheme. We collected $1.8 billion worth of premium for year-end June 13, $1.6 billion of claims paid. We have around 210,000 employers, 2.8 million workers. In 2013, we had 28,000 above excess claims, $12 billion in assets, $10.6 billion in liabilities, and a nice healthy solvency ratio at June 13 of 108%. That's the background so that you know what I'm talking about when we move on. So for the history lesson, our scheme turned 28 in September this year. This diagram's fairly simplistic, but to me, I feel like there have really been 2 very different eras of the scheme, and perhaps in those early days you could even say there were more subsets. The first 15 years or so of the scheme were very turbulent. Initially we were known as WorkCare, and then later on in the early days of WorkCover. This period of time was characterised by cost blowouts leading to premium increases, and as we all know, premium increases followed by legislative changes to control costs. Common law was in, then out, then back in again. Journey claims were transferred to the TAC. Our weekly excess was increased from 5 days to 10 days. Periods of stability would then follow those legislative change, and then the cycle would begin again. In very strong contrast, over the last 10 to 13 years, we've had the opposite. We've had cost reductions leading to premium reductions leading to benefit improvements, and to me that's a very different period. So we're a scheme with far greater balance than what we've had in the past, but our rate of improvement has slowed, and in some areas we've plateaued. So the challenge for us after this period of 10 to 13 years is how are we going to drive further change? Where are we going to get our next step change improvements from? So what do we want the future to look like for WorkSafe? Our strategy 2017 was launched 12 months ago, identifying our priorities and targets, and also some immediate challenges. We've prioritised 4 key areas: health and safety, return to work, service and sustainability. We've always prioritised these areas, but to my view, this strategy really does elevate the service and the return to work component. Our goals are for a step change improvement of around 10 to 15% in these areas. And this slide, I don't expect you to read the fine print, but this slide is our roadmap. It encapsulates what we're trying to do and how we're going to do it to achieve our strategy. It covers what we want to impact, how we want to work in the future, and what we want to change. We're in the process of reorganising the way that we work. Our core existing business models have been identified, and they're going to be used to drive continuous improvement. In the same way as we've done in the past, we'll keep refining them and keep moving forward with incremental changes. But the big ideas and innovations, we're managing in a different way. We've established what we call portfolios of delivery, or because we love TLAs, we call them pods. A pod has been established for each of those four key areas, and a key feature of these portfolios of delivery is that they are a cross-section of people from all areas of WorkSafe. So health and safety people, working with service people, working with those involved in treatment. And I think we might have had that at the high level in WorkSafe before, but we haven't had it at the sort of lower levels of people, and we haven't had, I don't think, that degree of collaboration across areas of our business. Our stakeholders and staff were consulted to identify how they felt the business needed to work in the future and to help identify what key initiatives should we be considering for the pods to then really hone down on two or three of those and then work out how we were going to implement them. What are our key KPIs for 2017? There's a whole bunch more, but the key ones are a 10 to 15% improvement on the rate of claims per million hours worked translates to 4,000 more workers returning home safely in 2017 than did in 2012. An additional 1,200 more workers will be back at work within 6 months of injury if we can achieve a 10 to 15% improvement in our return to work rates. And I really like the way that these have been, instead of talking about that claims per million and the, you know, we're continuing to evolve our language, so we're actually talking about the numbers of people impacted and lives improved by reaching our targets. We're targeting employer and worker service satisfaction to increase to 90%. That's quite a significant increase from July 12, where we had worker satisfaction of 83.1% and employer satisfaction of 86.7%. We're also targeting a cumulative actuarial release of $350 million over the 5 years. So each pod is at various stages of identifying and implementing their 2 to 3 key initiatives. In addition to the initiatives which are listed there against the pods, we've got 2 significant reviews being undertaken and they're well on their way. We have the Value for Money review, which is an external review across the TAC and WorkSafe, looking at where there might be opportunities to improve efficiencies in our administration costs. The Agent Model Review is an internal review being undertaken by Len Boehm, looking at our current agent model, what works, what doesn't work, how do we need to change the way in which we work with agents, looking at opportunities for increased efficiencies and effectiveness. The key initiatives, as I said, that have been identified already are listed here, and I'll touch on them when we look at the claim, each area of priority. Before we move on to claims trends and graphs and things that actuaries are more comfortable with, it's worth mentioning some of the other significant pieces of work, and this is where I run into difficulty about what I can put into this time frame that WorkSafe's been involved in. We've had a rewrite of our legislation. Our legislation going over that 28 years was a real mess, complex, difficult to follow. 2 acts, the 1985 and 1993 Compensation Acts, they've been combined into one simpler piece of legislation. No changes to benefit entitlements. It's about clarity and ease of use, and they'll take effect from 1 July next year. We heard from Pam Anders yesterday about all the work that's been done in work health, so I won't go into that. We have a red tape reduction program for employers. You know, we can tie employers up in lots of knots about what they need to do. We're aiming to unwind some of those knots and make it a bit easier. We had an Essential Services Commission review of both the TAC and WorkSafe that came out in June of this year. We've got some findings from that to implement. We have the NDIA to work with over time, potentially the NIIS coming up. If the moratorium on Comcare employers is lifted, that will be another area of work for us in the future. So there's a bit on. Looking now at our sustainability trends and targets, a lot of numbers on this page. A key feature of the longer term performance of the scheme is its strong financial results over the last 10 years. Len presented at the Accident Compensation Seminar in 2004, and his closing remarks were, "Sure, we've made some good progress, but don't get carried away. We've made a good start, but we're still only 40% of the way there in terms of turning around the performance of this scheme." At that time, in 2004, we had little improvement in our premium. We had just 3 years of actuarial release, and our solvency had just got back to 100%. But it was a very sound prediction, and a lot more hard work since 2004 has created a sea of green with just a couple of red patches in profit and loss as a result of poor investment returns and discount rate movements during the GFC and then again in 11-12. We've now had average premiums reduced by more than 40%. Our funding ratio has remained in the target area of 85 to 115%. We've had 12 consecutive years of profit from insurance operations and actuarial release. We've had significant benefit improvements to workers during that time. And since 1 July 2011, we've been paying dividend to government. It's not surprising that the rate of improvement in our scheme has slowed over time. Of the actuarial release, around about 75% of it is in the first half of the last 10 years. As the disclaimer on investment products often note, past returns are not necessarily indicative of future results, and so it is with us. A more finely balanced scheme makes it much harder to achieve returns in the future, and it's a challenge to even sometimes hold on to the liability gains that we've made over the past. Our 2017 targets in this area are more modest than in other areas. We're targeting a break-even premium of 1.2% down at the bottom there, and as I mentioned before, an actuarial release of $350 million, which if you look back over the past is a lot more modest than what we've been achieving in the past. Looking at safety, someone said to me, this actually looks like the New South Wales-Victorian border. The blue line isn't the Murray River. It's actually the total claim rate per million hours worked. So it's our scheme and our self-insurers. Our self-insurers make up about 8% of the scheme, and we're incorporating them where we can in our measurement because we have a responsibility to measure and regulate the self-insurers as well. There's a continuous trend of improvement there up to June 12, around about 8% overall. You can see in the last 12 months we've had a very significant improvement in the claim rate, around about 5 to 6%. This is definitely not an area that's plateaued, but if you look further into that steep drop in the last 12 months, it is largely medical expense only claims. And we get a different picture if we look at more seriously injured workers. Workers who've had more than 4 weeks of compensation under our scheme and the claims rate associated with that, you can see that the improvement in this chart is quite different. It's about half the level of the previous chart, and really it's a step change in around 2009, which we believe is largely associated with the GFC. This is an area that's plateaued, and this is an area that's a real challenge for us to improve on. Looking now at return to work, we measure our own return to work rates, or rather what we call not yet at work. This represents the proportion of injured workers who've had more than 10 days compensation and aren't yet back at work 6 months after injury. This is an area that's proved difficult for us to crack, and I was interested to hear about, you know, when you see those comparisons of different schemes and the return to work rates and how similar they are, and I know how much we're doing, and then WA says, well, we're not doing anything, and you think, oh, you know, I don't know how much economic, underlying economic conditions in the different states play out, but yes. With this chart, we've had a deterioration in our return to work rates, again associated with the GFC. What we saw with the GFC was, although less claims came in the door, those that did, or those that were already there, they stayed on for longer. The two major strategic initiatives here that have been identified are the health benefits of safe work, which involves harnessing current opportunities with GPs. For example, redesigning our medical certificates to look more at capacity and what people can do rather than incapacity. And that's similar to what Sam was talking about yesterday when his doctor, when he went for his helicopter medical, said, let's look at what you can do, not what you can't do. Let's see what people can do. We're also aiming at introducing better at work coordinators, and we plan to do that by further reforming the OC rehab market to act as coordinators between GPs, injured workers and employers. Okay. We'll whiz through service. We have three service measures that combine to make our overall service measure. We measure employer satisfaction, worker satisfaction, and under 2017, recognising that we have a role to the community, we're also measuring community satisfaction. This chart here is worker satisfaction. What we typically see with our worker and employer satisfaction measures is that WorkSafe Direct services, like our Health and Safety Inspectorate, our advisory service, are rated highly by the workers and employers. And the area we really need to improve on is our agent service, and naturally that's more difficult because agents are making entitlement decisions which can adversely affect workers and employers and make it harder to get a good service rating. This chart shows that service had deteriorated over the last couple of years and then improved in the last 12 months. Our strategic initiatives in this area include a lot of IT change so that workers and employers can lodge claims electronically, have them managed more electronically, and streamlining of treatment request in the first 12 months of injury, so that particularly in, say, the area of surgery, so that injured workers can get the surgery they need more quickly, they can get on with their lives and get back to work and back to health. Finally, looking at challenges that we see coming up, on the financial sustainability area, a big challenge for us is common law. Common law is very much matured. It's been back in the scheme for 13 years. We're seeing continued pressure on the serious injury gateway with more of the less seriously injured claimants litigating and being successful, which leads to more lodgements. With regard to medical costs, we've had reduction in treatment costs over a number of years, and what that's done has not surprisingly led to a build-up of pressure for fee increases from medical providers, doctors and the like. In the area of service, it's one of our successes where we have improved service, but expectation levels are also rising, and as people expect more and more from us, it becomes harder to satisfy them. So that's an area of challenge for us. And then on the safety and return to work front, Victoria has a changing mix of industries. We're moving from manufacturing to more of the service-based industries. We've got an ageing workforce like other areas in Australia, and our safety and return to work efforts really need to evolve to meet those challenges. So I'd like to conclude to say that we've come a long way in 28 years, but we recognise that to continue to improve in our scheme and to improve the balance in our scheme, particularly in the areas of return to work and service, we need to change and refresh what we're doing, keeping what works and refining it further, identifying inefficiencies and developing the next set of innovations to drive step change. We have a significant program of work ahead of us, and but I'm optimistic, and I look forward to seeing the changes. I'm not sure exactly what they will all be, but I look forward to seeing the scheme progress again and further over the next 2 years. Finally, have I got time? I've got a one-minute video. A lot of you would have seen our homecomings campaign. you may not have seen our Return to Work campaign, and I'd just like to leave you with that.
That was good.
Horrible.
That's a bit cool. Hey, why is your dad home all the time?
He hurt his back at work.
Really well. He seems kind of grumpy.
He's a pain. He's always going off at Mum and me, just for stupid things.
Really?
I'm just sick of it.
Well, that doesn't suck.
Yeah, I know.
So it's worth staying in touch?
Yeah. I've said that there's other stuff I can do. But I don't want to make it any worse.
Right now it'd actually help you.
Really? Okay.
Thanks, Jim. Bye. Thank you, mate.
So how's work?
I'm good.
So, did you miss me? More often than not, helping an injured worker get back to work sooner is the best medicine.
Thanks, Linda. Next, it's also my great pleasure to introduce Brad. I mean, just reading through his bio, I'm actually quite envious. He's amazing. He's got qualifications.
Don't let mine.
It's not yours, the wrong one. Engineering, health and safety and public sector management. He's also a non-executive director of the Personal Injury Education Foundation. And then prior to getting into workers' compensation, he spent 12 years working in injury prevention, performing various roles, including leading teams responsible for occupational health and safety across a range of industry sectors. And then the last 15 years, he's been with Tasmanian Workers' Comp. And he's also responsible for managing the asbestos compensation scheme for Tasmania. So lots of strings to your bow, Brad. I really look forward to your presentation on the Tasmanian scheme update. Over
Thank
to you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. Numbers are going to be a little bit smaller for Tasmania compared to what we've just... but they say big things come in small packages, so we'll see how that goes. So, I suppose I'll start by talking about the most recent change that's happened within the Tasmanian area is the amalgamation of work cover and workplace standards. So we've gone back, we've hooked the regulator in with the insurer, and as a product of that, we're going through restructure, which when you listen to most of the other jurisdictions, that seems to be the normal sort of process as the wheels go around, so to speak. So today what I propose to talk to you about is provide a brief overview with regards to what the scheme is doing, look at some of the recent developments. I don't propose to hang around in the charts and numbers and all that too long, because you can read that online if you need to get into that level of detail. Touch on the asbestos scheme and then some of the new initiatives that we're rolling out through the scheme. So, little bit small numbers, but they're there. 7 licensed insurers and 11 self-insurers. We're a privately underwritten jurisdiction, so we don't have to carry the risks, and we don't have all the money in the budget that the Victoria has. With state services basically treated as a self-insurer for the purpose of the exercise. About $145 million written premium each year, 232,000 FTEs. We've seen an improvement in the number of claims between this year and last year. We've gone from about 9,400 down to about 8,500. So that's and by the time that expands out, it'll probably settle around the 9,000. So we're trending in the right direction there. Certainly 5,500 receive weekly benefits. We have an excess in a scheme, which I'll touch on a little bit later, but basically the first week is covered by the employer and the first 200 of medical expenses, etc. So you'll see total payments of $147 million, and if you're quick, you would have picked up that the written premium is only $145 million, so you've kind of jumped to the end. Weekly benefits, $49 million, lump sums, $41 million, and medical, $46 million. So the average claim size is about $17,500. And of that, 5,400 or thereabouts is medical related. You'll see a bit of a medical theme running through the presentation. The reason for that is because we've spent a fair bit of time and effort trying to get our doctors back into a a position where they're active scheme participants as part of the operation of helping people to get back to work. So, recent developments, probably the big ticket item of recent times has been the introduction of WIMS, which is the Work Cover Information Management System. So we basically were running around with an old DBase 4 database, trying to run the scheme with very limited data. We bit the bullet and brought WIMS online on the 1st of July, which is computerized system. The big advantage, or the big ticket item, which I'm sure is the other probably under written jurisdictions would have spoken about, would have been the introduction of NIDS. So we've had the National Disability Insurance Scheme, where we've got our national insurer data spec. So we've got our NIDS, and that's a data spec that all the privately underwritten jurisdictions have joined in and satisfying, makes it a lot easier for licensed insurers to do business with the jurisdictions, because they're providing one source of data across all their jurisdictions. Of course, the downside with introducing a new system is that we get some teething issues with bringing new systems online, and it causes a fair bit of anxiety to our actuary as part of the process. So we've spent a lot of time resolving some of our data issues, but they're getting on top of those sorts of things. You'll note here we've got the primary treating medical practitioner role. One of the challenges we had is with the scheme is that we basically introduced accreditation for medical practitioners in 2001. Which basically meant that they had to come to us and sit a test to be able to issue a medical certificate. The downside of that process was we didn't actually tell them what we wanted or what their scheme's expectations were with regards to what and the way they behave in the scheme. So we've spent, since probably 2009, we've been spending a fair bit of time trying to re-educate the doctors with regards to their role, what the expectations are of recent times, introducing health benefits of work, and I'll touch on that a little bit later as we go through. The other big ticket, I think it's probably a bit of a sleeper in the scheme at the moment, is the impairment guidelines. We introduced new guidelines back in 2011. There were some issues around the date that they were to take effect. There was some legislation put in place in order to clarify and remove some of the uncertainty, and then we had a recent decision of our tribunal which actually overturned the intention of the legislation. So there's a lot of cases sitting in a holding pattern waiting to a court decision to come down to see which ones will take effect. And then I suspect we'll see a big run of lump sum payments coming through the system. So that's where we're... they're the big ticket items in the scheme at the moment. So just looking, I'll probably just skip through these charts relatively quickly, but we're seeing wages growth increase for the first time in a couple of years, which is encouraging. Claim numbers decouraging. Now, this data, I might add, is for licensed insurers only. It's excluding self-insurers and the state service, primarily because we've probably got a little bit more confidence in the licensed insurer data than we have with the others. But what we can see here is that the claim numbers are decreasing, which is encouraging. Not exactly sure why, whether it's a product of a downturn in the economy. We're running at 8% unemployment in Tasmania. We're also a small to medium-sized business. A lot of large businesses shut down. No key determinant that I can identify that were one point that I would point to. The other thing I should have mentioned in the front palm at the scheme dynamics is... I was attending a couple of the other jurisdictions and they all seemed to want to put the return to work rates up, and so we're running at 79% through the national monitor, so, and our disputation rate is 10%, so for those who are taking notes and comparing schemes as they're going through, I'm not sure how that compares to WA, Chris. Okay, so above excess claimants, we are seeing an increase in above excess claims. And this is kicked off primarily around the 2000 and the trend's been going up quite heavily, and we're starting to see I'm not sure that it's necessarily a problem, but it has certainly has jumped from 60 to 90% above. I think the main reason why we're seeing that is the excess is, hasn't been indexed to inflation, so it's been set at the same level for many years, and a $200 limit. When you go to the doctor nowadays, it doesn't take long to get over $200, particularly when we're encouraging our primary treating medical practitioners to spend the time with the patients to make sure that they are providing all the things that we want them to do. We don't want the 5-minute in and out, here's your bit of paper on you. We want them to engage with the workers. We want them to engage with the other scheme participants. We see them as being gatekeepers to specialists, and the behaviour around that, making sure that certificates are filled out correctly and that they're able to actively manage the worker back into a return to work phase. Above excess claims, you can see the kick-off with regards to legislative changes that came into effect in 2009. 2009 was seen as the board had spent, or we'd spent somewhere in the order of 5-6 years developing an injury management model, so shifting the focus away from claims management and more to injury management. The product of that was that we needed to put some legislative underpinning in place to support that, and at the same time we also was changing the dynamics of the scheme from a short tail scheme to a long to more to a medium tail scheme, and there's a number of provisions which we'll talk about in a moment that are coming through. So we can see weekly benefits has certainly trending have been trending up in this area here, but they've plateaued out in the last year, and the medicals are starting to slow down a little bit as well, which is encouraging, but we'll see where the data actually finally resolves. One of the challenges we've got with the new scheme is that the data, there's no one point in time, it just is continual to update it as the insurers upload their data, so the experience expands over time. Claim payments, lump sums are the bit that are certainly probably the area that are causing some level of concern. We have common law in the scheme with a 30% whole person threshold up until 2009, when we reduced it down to 20% whole person impairment. When it was 30%, pretty much nobody got over the limit, so it was essentially a no common law scheme. But now we're starting to see, with the reduction down to 20% in 2009, that we are starting to see some more issues or claims coming through. The other thing that we introduced into the scheme in 2009 was a 2-year period where there was no ability to settle claims. The purpose of that was to put all the focus back into return to work and early intervention and all the stuff about getting the people back to work. We've now just clicked over the 2-year period, so I anticipate we'll start to see a run on settlements coming through. And we've also had seen a couple larger payments coming through, $2 million plus of recent times. So I suspect we're going to see a bit of activity in this space. And then with the impairment guidelines, I think we're also seeing the lawyers are hovering around as part of the process, waiting to see which way the decisions are handed down with regards to where that's going to go. And that's another one on lump sums. Again, you can see the pretty significant increase post amendments. Premiums, we're a little bit dearer than a lot of the other privately written jurisdictions. 2.36 is the suggested rate for this year, but we've also got the advantage that our insurers seem to want to write business at 20% below what the suggested rate is, which is really quite useful from the point of view of keeping rates down, but it's probably not a lot of fun for their profitability, which this chart goes to show that back in this period of here, the rates were high, profitability, which was good, rates come down, claim costs up, not so good profitability, and we're just starting to see the claims the premium rates start to increase again in order to try and get back some of these losses. Whilst there's an element of uncertainty, you know, exactness in this this chart, it highlights the fact that some of them are doing it pretty tough at the moment, and therefore they probably need to put their rates up a little bit in order to make a bit of money. Asbestos scheme, so you get two schemes for the price of one in this presentation. So we, in 2011 we introduced an asbestos compensation fund. Primarily that was aimed to deal with people who have an asbestos related disease. It was a different mechanism for processing those. Insurers typically just probably don't handle asbestos claims as well as what we would have liked, so the scheme's been set up as being quite generous. 4% levy on all policyholders, or 4% of premiums goes into the fund. We've had 58 claims come through since it started out. We've paid out somewhere in the order of $10 million. Significantly more generous than workers' comp, $500,000 or thereabouts, in regards to a lump sum payment out of this, but they certainly don't get that out of the workers' comp scheme, so there's some question around whether or not there is a process of aligning the schemes at some point into the future, but given the way the costs are, I suspect that won't be the case. And you'll see, obviously, that lump sum payments are the primary source of expenditure in that scheme, with very little paid on medicals due to the severity of the type of injuries. Okay, just quickly on a couple of initiatives. We're looking at fair and sustainable compensation, trying to identify some variables and principles around the operation of the scheme with regards to giving us some understanding of what we should be doing in regards to measuring the performance of the scheme and setting some strategic direction moving forward. We, like all jurisdictions, are seeing an influx of non-event type claims for psychological injury. So we're doing embarked on a process of trying to get an understanding of the severity of the problem, particularly in regards to bullying and harassment. Indications are that we're about 14% of the population, 14% of people experience bullying within Tasmanian workplaces based on 2009-10 data. So we need to, which seems particularly high, so we're running a survey at the moment with regards to collecting a better understanding of what's happening, with the view of creating a strategy to seeking to educate and reduce the impact of those type of injuries. You'll see we'll be looking at a broader telephone survey, then in-depth interviews with individuals who have claimed to be bullied, and then also looking at the way the organisations respond to the process. And just quickly, some of the things we'll be doing with our doctor accreditation. Initially we had a system where they came in and was a paper-based old process for regulating them. We're now moving to an online system where we're able to go in, provide additional training. We link into the medical disability advisor as part of the process of providing them with the tools that they need in order to do their to better manage workplace injuries. We're also looking at setting up a mentoring service, so giving them somewhere to go in the event that they've got a problem or a case that's stuck, and the medical practitioner's handbook is a reference material that they're able to use. With regards to the online training system, we're certainly seeing what the scheme's expectations are, what their role is in the scheme, giving them some advice on how to certify appropriately, making sure that they understand when it's medically necessary to put people out of the workplace. Health benefits of work and evidence-based practice are linked into the medical disability advisor. And that's it.